If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S. Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. How you doing today, Adam?
I think, you know, if we were passing each other by the water cooler, I would say it's one of those days, Ben. And then I would just not even break stride. I would just keep walking.
And I'd be like, did you see Seinfeld last night?
Is it like this in your city in that the syndicated Seinfelds they show are basically only one of the 16 that the local network has bought?
Yeah, like, it seems like there's a very limited number that they run in syndication for some reason. I don't know.
I feel like we're getting Stinky Car like twice a week now.
We don't receive any broadcast channels where I live at all.
Don't you have one of those antennas?
It doesn't make any sense. Like, we have one of those antennas. Like, there's a hill on one side of our house, but it's not occluding, like, where broadcasts would be coming from.
Doesn't those are make the any Beverly sense. Hills, right? That's what you're referring to?
No.
Black gold. Texas tea.
Adam, it sounds like you're having a bit of a day, and one of the ways I like to unwind at the end of a long, annoying day is by blowing up people's spots and defeating them in contests. Should we go to war with each other?
Oh, that sounds great. I think war would make me feel better, right?
Almost
Calgon
anything.
War, take me away.
We're at war.
There's been no formal declaration of war.
Maybe this trip will bring us some luck.
That nonsense is centuries behind us.
War! Go to war!
Do you want to do mirror mirror versus mirror mirror war?
Yeah, that's very appealing to me. we'll have mirror mirror war.
Yeah.
So just to be clear, these cards are the expansion set for the Star Trek customizable card game, and like a lot of the cards we open on the show, there are occasionally rare cards and like collector cards that include like pieces of uniform or holograms or whatever, so we're always on the lookout for those.
Is that going to happen in customizable card game?
Yeah, I'm reading the back of the package. It says it's all part of the fun.
Shit, dog.
You never know what you're going to get in these packs. We usually play best out of five, but I mean, this is war, and sometimes things don't go according to plan.
Yeah.
I don't take a dump without a plan.
I'm ready to flip.
Me too.
3, 2, 1. I'm a rebel interceptor. It's a fighter used by Terran rebels in the mirror universe, typically stolen from the Bajorans. Smiley enhanced and commanded this one. That's Chief O'Brien, right?
Yeah, that's Smiley.
Smiley O'Brien. He's got a range of 6+X, weapons of 8. And shields of 6.
My card does not have any measurables, Ben, because it is probably impossible to measure. I have the Bajoran wormhole itself.
Whoa!
Pretty big butthole here. you can, this is, all of the verbiage here is having to do with the game. the stuff I don't understand.
Do you think that the Dominion are just total peaches in the Mirror Universe? Just real sweet, sweet, sweet people?
They're just flying around the galaxy drinking milkshakes. That's all they're doing.
They put the gem in Jem'Hadar.
Sure do. What do you think, Ben?
Tough call.
Your thing goes inside my thing.
Yeah.
So where's the power in that?
I mean, also, I feel like your thing could destroy, right? Because it's got
sure.
Prophet aliens in it.
You get off the rails in that thing, you're going to hit a wall and explode.
You could shoot a handful of torpedoes out of my inner ears, though.
It's true. It would only take a few to destroy it.
I don't know. You want to call that a draw?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. Flip the next one over.
3, 2, 1. Ben, I have Tivor. He's a Klingon science officer. He works for the Klingon Cardassian Alliance. He's assigned to Tarok Nuar. He finds the station rife with gossip, backstabbing, and treachery. But he likes it that way.
He's sort of a
Klingon Vanderpump, isn't he? He's got an integrity of 5, a cunning of 7, and a strength of 7. There's Tivor.
This is another interesting matchup. My card is for an Agonizer, the pain-inflicting device developed by the Terran Empire. Fear of punishment drives crew members to maintain maximum efficiency at all times, ensures alertness, loyalty, and obedience.
You and I both know, Ben, that the Agonizer booth trumps Tivor.
Yeah. I mean, this is the Agonizer that's, like, belt-mounted.
Oh.
But yeah, anybody would take that over Tivor if they wanted one to win a fight with, right?
The convenience of taking agony on the go. That's what you want. The Agonizer Walkman.
Now the Agonizer is wireless. All right, let's go to our next card.
All right.
3, 2, 1. I have a character named Gant. He's a medical character, typical member of the Shakar Resistance Cell. Cared for the mortally wounded Kira Taban, now a part of Kira Nerys's memories of her father's death. Integrity of 6, cunning of 6, strength of 7. And this dude is pretty handsome looking. He's kind of like a Bajoran Patrick Bateman thing going on.
Is he wearing Gant brand clothing?
Well, there's 2 T's at the end of this particular Gant.
Oh, sure. So they don't run afoul of of
and
copyright?
He might be wearing Gant brand clothing. I can't see if there's a button on the back of his collar or not. It's one of their signature elements of the Gant Rugger line of products.
Oh, I think you might have me beat, Ben. I have Aramax. Aramax is a Cardassian medical representative in the Mirror Universe. He strives to be noticed without raising the ire of Security Chief Garrick, but he has done neither thus far.
I see those hype beasts lined up around the corner for Aramax sometimes.
Right?
When the Foot Locker gets a new shipment in.
Such a sneakerhead.
Yeah.
Ben. All right, I think it's 2-0 you.
Yeah, this is not doing anything to help your bad day.
My mood has vastly improved since starting the game. Let's flip over a 4th card.
Okay.
3, 2, 1. Ben, I've got Talak. He is a Klingon security man. He has served for 4 years as a bodyguard in the House of Duras. He took a position aboard Tarok Nuar to escape the unpredictable demands of Lursa and Bator. Well, I mean, I'm glad they mentioned that it was the Mirror Universe, Ben, because I don't think that's changed.
Yeah.
They're unpredictable in both universi.
Are they like chaotic evil in one and chaotic good in the other or something like that?
As long as windowpane decolletage remains constant, it's all that matters to me. What do you got?
I got a D7 class Klingon battlecruiser. From the picture, this looks to be an original series model. It says Klingon battlecruiser cruiser circa 2267. Some were provided to the Romulan Star Empire in exchange for cloaking technology. It's got a range of 6, weapons 5, and shields of 5. Kind of a weak sauce ship.
What a pile of garbage.
Yeah, a real hoopty. Something that John Roderick would get for free and then drive around until it broke down on the side of the road. And then he would just walk away from it because it would be impossible to connect him to it.
Yeah.
I don't know, Adam. I think anybody that works that closely with Lursa and Bator and also has the good sense to get away from them probably could kick the ass of this ship.
Pretty smart. I mean, he has a strength of 9. That's stronger than that ship, huh?
Yeah. No kidding.
I mean, in Card War, I think it really comes down to the strength number.
Yeah. He could punch that ship and break it in half.
Like a karate man chopping through blocks of ice.
Uh-huh. Adam, do you want to flip over a 5th card?
Yeah, where are we at? You have 2, I have 1, and there's 1 tie.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1. Stolen cloaking device. Regent Worf detained Zek in the Mirror Universe, demanding a cloaking device as ransom. To save their Negus, Quark and Rom stole one from a Klingon ship. General Martok was not pleased. It's just a kind of a beepity boopity object sitting on a lit up panel. No evidence of a dongle or not a dongle.
The thing in my card could not fit on a tabletop, Ben, because I have a Galore-class starship.
Whoa.
This is a typical Cardassian warship in the Mirror Universe of a Type 3 designation. And it's part of the Klingon-Cardassian Alliance fleet, so you know it's good, right?
Those are some of the best Cardassian cruisers.
We've mentioned it before, and I'll mention it again. Little weird the Cardassians have ships in the shape of their symbol.
Yeah.
That's what this is.
What if the Borg's ships were like that hand symbol? Oh no, another Borg hand dropping out of warp speed.
Target phasers on the phalanges.
Tell Admiral Hansen to talk to the hand.
The fight does not go well, Picard. We're getting the shit slapped out of us out here.
All right.
We are so dumb.
Yeah, I think we've got an even game here. I think we need a tiebreaker card.
Okay, this is the one for all the marbles. 3, 2, 1. And the card that I have flipped is Mr. Quark.
Mr. Quark.
Yeah, you might be familiar with him.
Please. Quark was my father. Call me the Reverend Dr. Quark.
He's the bartender who pretends to work for the Alliance. Quark secretly helps Terran slaves escape from Tarak Nor. He's the Harriet Quarkman of DS9.
My card is a dilemma.
Much like the dilemma of including my weird Quark Harriet Tubman portmanteau in this episode.
Yeah, will we leave that in the episode or not? Who knows? I mean, it's not like there's anything we can do to stop the tide of concern trolls that show up in our Menchies every day.
Yeah, that are dumped into our frozen yogurt as toppings. Gotta pick those gummy bears out.
This dilemma is Kelvan, Show of Force. Aliens from the Andromeda Galaxy demonstrated their power to Captain Kirk by distilling 2 crew members to their chemical components. Crushing a container instantly killed the victim.
Whoa. What was this called?
Kelvan, Show of Force. And it's a guy in one hand holding like kind of a dodecahedron that looks like it was made out of pumice, maybe. And on the other hand, perhaps the crushed remains of a similar object, and there's, like, sand pouring out of it.
So after he's killed these people, he can go pumice his corns?
Yeah. Yeah, he wants to exfoliate, and he picked this up at Bath and Body Works on his way to the Milky Way galaxy from Andromeda.
Well, I doff my Mirror Universe cap to you. I think that one's going to be a winner.
You think that's a winner?
I think that beats Quark, TBH.
I That is mighty charitable of you, sir.
You get Quark inside one of those dodecahedrons or whatever. he's going to get crushed like anyone else.
He would be sold to the highest bidder if he was in one of those dodecahedrons.
He's going to be a puck when he's dead, and this seems like a contraption that could... That could puckify him.
Do you think that when they're reading funeral rites at a Ferengi funeral, somebody says ashes to ashes, pucks to pucks?
That was a really great moment.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's the kind of insightful question you can expect me to ask here on The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine.
At every Ferengi eulogy, someone has to mention the great Wayne Gretzky quote of, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Good win, Ben.
I feel great, especially to gloat over you.
You think our luck gets much better as we pivot in the episode today?
I think it might, Adam. You want to talk about this one?
Yeah, let's talk it out. I think we have to. We have to talk about Deep Space Nine Season 3, Episode 11, Past Tense, Part 1.
It's a pun on the word tense, because it's so tense!
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
I don't know when this became policy, but I prefer my cliffhangers not to be telegraphed with a part one appendage to the title.
Yeah.
Why don't you give me some dun-dun-duns at the end?
Yeah, surprise me with it.
Yeah, the Defiant has rolled up on Earth for some conferencing. And,
yeah.
And they're talking about all the relatives that might be there and the ways in which Earth is disappointing on a watercolor level.
Yeah. Mostly. It's one of those things, guys, like you don't go over to somebody's house and tell them you don't like their rug or whatever.
If you ask me, the seas could be a little more purple.
It's as if the Federation are a blue bodies of water only club.
I just think Kira and Dax are real assholes not to bite their tongues about this.
You know who low-key flies a lineup in here under the glove? Is O'Brien saying that he based an entire career out of hating the formality of, like, fancy dinners? He's like,
thanks, but no thanks. That's why I stayed an enlisted man. They don't expect me to show up for these formal dinners.
Cool way to turn your career into a cul-de-sac, O'Brien. Like, nice one.
Like, he goes real class warrior on them.
Yeah.
In a way that is, like, pretty outside of what we normally see in Trek. Like, nobody is ever, like, lording their lack of responsibility over anybody, typically.
Maybe he went too far when he was on the Enterprise, and that was why Thomas Riker tore into him on the Defiant in the last episode. Like, I know your feelings on officers versus enlisted men, O'Brien.
There's nothing to say to you, O'Brien. I think you know why.
Well, this is an episode of Deep Space Nine, so we have to have Quark appear in it because
yeah.
He is in the main cast. And, you know, we can't just let Armin Shimmerman take a fucking break from having all that loaf on him.
Yeah. Enjoy your 8 hours of makeup for your 3 minutes of screen time.
It's really 3 minutes cut in half because, you know, half the time they're cutting back from the view screen to Sisko.
Do you think he reads a script and he's like, are you fucking kidding me? There's like a half a page of dialogue here.
Why? Can it just be a voice call? The crew have showed up at Earth to kind of brief the brass on the Dominion situation. And Quark is doing the Negus a favor. The Negus, of course, played a little bit of a part in keeping the Dominion thing down to a low simmer, and is now calling that favor in because a family member of his has been arrested, and Quark is for some reason the message boy.
I do owe him a favor.
He thinks so too.
Yeah, if you're going to be at City Hall anyway, why don't you go across the hall and see if you can't fix this?
Yeah.
Quark makes a reference to Devrin 3 in his comments.
Uh-huh.
Which is familiar, Ben. That's the area of space where the time butthole appeared in the last episode of TNG. You remember that? The Devrin system?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I remember
that. Interesting.
So I guess no damage done over there.
Yeah.
Devrin 3.
Doing great. The fun, like, button on this scene is Sisko quoting chapter and verse of the rules of acquisition to Quark. So apparently he now has the rules of acquisition memorized, and this really stuns Quark. Fun little Quark eyes to camera. And then we are into the process of beaming down to Earth. You get to see the Defiant's transporter room, I think, for the first time. It's a real tiny one.
It's the size of a barrel with suspenders on it. There's really not much there.
It seems like Chief O'Brien might be a little rusty on working the transporter.
But according to our sensors, they never materialize at their destination. They're just gone.
Call me Mr. Butterfingers.
Got a little loose with the annular confinement, wouldn't you say?
You gotta confine that annular. Annual. Is it angular confinement or annular confinement?
Ankylosaur.
Well, how about that? Annular is a synonym for ring-shaped.
I think we could have guessed that.
If you get like an insect bite, you might have an annular patch on your arm.
Sure. Or if you like doing it annular. Yeah, so could potentially be a problem because they lost track of him. Like, there's no corresponding appearance by the away team down on Earth. We cut right away to where Sisko and Bashir have ended up. I mean, it appears that they arrived somewhere.
Yeah.
And that place is San Francisco, but it's not the San Francisco that that they're familiar with. They are they're in the Tenderloin.
They're in,
or close by.
Yeah, and they're getting kind of harassed by a couple of guards who are wielding the kinds of shotguns that that Muldoon tried to fight velociraptors with in Jurassic Park.
They kind of look like fascist Ghostbusters. And Ben, it's one of the great that guys. It's Dick Miller.
Yeah.
I love Dick Miller.
Yeah, he was the we talk a lot about Dick Miller in our donors only episode on the film Gremlins.
Yeah, he's one of the greats.
He's the super super jingoistic tractor driver guy.
You got to watch out for the foreigners because they plant gremlins in their machinery.
I imagine, like, because TV shoots on such a compressed schedule, they probably just gave him the direction, act like that guy you were in Gremlins. Like, that's your motivation.
All right, that guy you were in Gremlins, but he has the gun that Muldoon tries to fight velociraptors with in Jurassic Park.
Dick Miller's like, say no more. Got it.
That guy's a pro.
I love a director that really knows how to talk to me.
Yeah, yeah. He's not giving me line reads. He's just, you know, he's telling me my motivation and letting me explore the character.
He respects me as an artist, and he knows my work. Bashir and Sisko are there without their comm badges.
Yeah, every bit of metal has disappeared off their uniforms in a way that does not exactly go explained initially. But we don't really have much time because they're getting hassled for their papers, please. And
yeah.
They don't have papers. So so off they go with the authorities and... The thing they were leaning against looks to me like a subway entrance, and mm-hmm. So the camera kind of pans down into the underground, and we find that Dax materialized right next to them, but like a floor down, and she is still unconscious, having not been roused by the barrel of a shotgun.
This is the first of several scenes where we see how things are displayed. In this time period, this is the year 2024. And did you see that all of the fonts are the Apple font from the original Macintosh computer?
Yeah, and like they used it on the original iPod too.
Yeah, so it was all very familiar in that way, in a fun kind of way.
Yeah, they did quite a bit more graphic design to like build this world than... Yeah. Star Trek has traditionally done, like, that sign you're referencing is the subway tunnel, and they've got, like, subway lines that are, you know, don't necessarily correspond to BART, the existing medium-range train that operates in San Francisco. So I think it's a really nice, efficient way to give dimensionality to this version of the future.
Yeah, I wish we saw that train. It would be great if it was the same BART train that we know today.
But just like super run down.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think we both said the same thing.
Gold Ducat.
Ducat.
Gold Ducat.
So.
A good Samaritan finds Dax at the bottom of the stairwell.
And not just good, but handsome as well.
Yeah, he's got real David Bowie vibes, doesn't he?
Yeah, and we'll come to find, not just good and handsome, but also rich. The trifecta. You usually have to pick two.
I love how he doesn't notice her spots until like 20 minutes later, where really that should be the first thing that he sees.
Yeah.
Instead, he just notices her manner of dress.
Yeah, and he's like, well, why don't you come with me? You can use the computer in my office to get some ID, because if you don't have ID, it's your fucking ass in this time and place. She's also just like way quicker on the uptake than Sisko and Bashir.
Yeah.
Like Sisko and Bashir, while they have shotguns pointed in their nose, are like, this is strange. And and she's like, oh yeah, I must have misplaced my papers. Thank you, kind sir.
Eight lifetimes of street smarts is what this equals.
Totally.
You know? They don't mention that that's a part of her deal. They just let her act as if.
I did get a little creeped out by a choice that this actor made when they leave the subway station, which is that he grabs her forearm very firmly and walks her to his office. Like, it made me think that they were telegraphing something like horrible was about to happen to her, you know?
I sure felt that way. I mean, he is Chris Brenner.
I'm Chris Brenner. Brenner Information Systems. You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
The Chris Brenner?
Holy shit.
He's like the Bill Gates of Brenner Information Systems.
When does Brenner Information Systems become self-aware and begin judgment day is my question.
Oh, man, I'm going to Jackie and Laurie you an amazing photo of Jim Metzler, the actor who played Chris Brenner.
Please do.
Present day Jim Metzler has a real fun look at him.
Oh boy. Wow. Did you just send me a picture of Robert Plant?
His long locks at him.
Wow. He looks like a friend of the kind.
Yeah, he does. He may be sitting in front of a marijuana plant in this picture.
They found him in Berkeley. They left him in Berkeley. This guy tries to make the case, like, once he gets Dax back into his apartment, he's like, oh, yeah, those spots. I, too, was a man with a tattoo once, and then goes on to describe a Maori full sleeve arm tattoo he used to have.
This is the 90s dunking on the 90s in the like this is another technology that Star Trek figured out before the rest of us. Was we're going to look back on the 90s and really make fun of every white dude that had a tribal tat.
The script was written by Robert Hewitt Wolf, and I imagine like Robert Hewitt Wolf has a son named Scott who just recently got this tattoo, and he is like turning to the screen and making fun of that life choice. You'll never get a square job, Scott.
You give the Hewitt Wolfs a bad name. So back on the D, O'Brien and Kira are puzzling through this transporter problem, and they're saying that Starfleet is saying, like, you didn't beam anybody anywhere. And they kind of hit on the idea that the cloaking device in the Defiant may have had something to do with it, because the hull is impregnated with something called chroniton particles.
Yeah, those are the particles from Star Trek First Contact. And like that is a line basically read by Jonathan Frakes in that scene that we dunked on quite a bit during our live show tour about First Contact. Like, they bring the viewer up to speed with time travel using three lines of dialogue.
Yeah.
Sensors show chronometric particles emanating from the sphere.
They're creating a temporal vortex.
Time travel.
I don't know whether this is a good character moment or a bad character moment for Kira and O'Brien in saying that neither of them display any kind of grief. I mean, the scene is not pregnant with stress in the way that, oh my God, I beam these people away and now they're gone. Kind of should. It could, on the one hand, speak to their, like, sober professionalism that you'd want in this moment, but also, like, I think it's okay to be extremely freaked out by this.
Yeah, I think this is O'Brien having a little bit too much enterprise privilege that is going unchecked.
Uh-huh.
Like, anytime something like this happens on the Enterprise, it is like a snap your fingers and solve the problem situation, because you got Geordi LaForge there to help you puzzle through it.
Where's your Geordi now? Smiley. What we get for the rest of the episode are three storylines. We've got the mystery on the D, we've got the story as it's unfolding for Sisko and Bashir, and we've got what Dax is going through, and they are all very different tonally.
Yeah, Bashir and Sisko are in a heap of shit, and what they are being taken to by these gendarmes is I think meant to be modeled off kind of like a Warsaw ghetto type of idea. It's a walled in part of San Francisco that is called the Sanctuary Zone, that is, you know, tenement buildings and, you know, throngs of people and you know, food rationing, and they're kind of being checked in because their identities can't be verified, and therefore the police just assume them to not be able to get gainful employment and be active members of society. And this is an idea that's arisen a couple of times throughout history. The last person I heard advocate for it was John Roderick when he told me about his ziggurat homelessness plan.
Sure. That was not something he campaigned on directly.
Yeah, yeah. That was the other shoe was going to drop when he seized power.
Sure.
But yeah, they get shown through like an armored door and into kind of a DMV like environment where they're given numbers and scanned in and told to wait.
It's a real shithole. It's like burn barrel level shithole happening in here. It's a heady mix of poverty and mental illness and anger.
It's like squalor and garbage in a way that is like every underpass of the 101 freeway near my house. I love
LA. The Dick Miller character is growing increasingly frustrated by Bashir and Sisko's lack of understanding and how things work.
Now sit down, shut up, and fill out the forms. And if you got any problems, don't come to me with them.
And so that's going to be a going conflict throughout their storyline as they're being processed. Back on the ship, O'Brien has figured out that some piece of microscopic singularity passed through the transporter at just the right moment. And it's not that Bashir, Sisko, and Dax were sent to some different place, but that they were sent to some different time. Yeah. And that time is probably centuries different from their current time. So that's a relief, right?
Mm-hmm. It seems like they've got something to go on. Like they're going to potentially have a way to work back through the system and figure out where they went, but they might not be able to be accurate. And so the plan that they kind of come up with as a group, him and Odo and Kira, is I'll pick like five likely time periods and send people back with tricorders and see if we can find them.
I love this plan. I wish we got a whole season of this search, like bottle episodes for every time period.
That would be great.
The most expensive season of Star Trek ever.
They're just constantly doing that thing from First Contact where they head to the transporter room and say, "Computer, appropriate garments for 21st century."
So great.
So it turns out Sisko is actually kind of a nerd of this time period.
Yeah.
Which is very helpful because he can kind of commander-splain everything to the outsider Bashir, who is there to be us, totally ignorant of this time period. And the idea is that they're butting up against a watershed moment in world history. They are in San Francisco a couple days before the beginning of what are referred to as the Nachos Bell Riots, a delicious mixture of tortilla chips, queso, carne asada, and sour cream, guacamole, and salsa. Delicious.
When that tenderloin Taco Bell ran out of refried beans that day, all hell broke loose.
No, but the idea of these brutally enforced ghettos being something that polite society tolerates because they kind of sweep a social problem under the rug is about to boil over, and like the poor people in San Francisco are going to riot and rise up, and the actions of somebody named Gabriel Bell, who heroically makes sure that the riots do not result in the wanton deaths of any of the guards or staff of this ghetto, will inspire political change, and people will reject the sanctuary zones as a solution to a problem. And in fact, like, humanity will start to kind of like get on the path of the post-scarcity future that the people in the Federation enjoy.
I love what this episode does with this setup, because you're thinking, oh man, I can't wait to meet Gabriel Bell. This guy sounds amazing.
Yeah.
But the foreshadowing of this, with all of this front loading of his biography, is that like, oh, well, if we're finding all this out about Gabriel Bell right now, what are the chances that he will be showing up on the scene to have the opportunity to like tell his own story?
Right.
Probably not that good, right?
Yeah. So they also start peppering in the idea of there being concern over like contaminating the timeline. Like, they know things about history and could potentially rewrite it by, you know, accidentally intervening. And like, that's down to like the doctor wants to like help a suffering kid that they find in a hallway, but the commander is not sure that even that is acceptable, because if he like saves a life, what if that life he saves turns out to have a major historical impact?
It's like the Ashton Kutcher movie Butterfly Effect.
Whoa.
It's exactly like that. There's a fair amount of teaching the viewer in this ep, and one of the conduits for that is the social worker that gives us and Bashir and Sisko the lowdown on how these sanctuary cities work.
Yeah, and she's kind of like that. She's in that weird position of being a bureaucrat that is employed by and therefore sort of complicit in the sanctuary zone program, but yeah, also doesn't love it and doesn't necessarily approve of the logic of it.
She's clearly not evil. She clearly feels a lot of compassion for these people and everyone else, but like, she's in a system that she can't change.
I hate it, but that's the way it is.
The economic pressures on a character like this are such that if she doesn't have a job, then she is in the thing that she disapproves of. So it's one of those horrible catch-22s that some people find themselves in, where like, just to keep their head above water, they have to kind of compromise on their own values.
She's not such a good person that she doesn't use the slang of the time,
yeah,
against gimmies, which are people looking for jobs and a place to live, or dims, which is the term of art for the mentally ill.
I try not to use them, but it's a bad habit.
Not a great look by the social worker.
Yeah.
In her use of these terms.
She drops a lot of G-bombs, a lot of D-bombs.
I mean, you should probably cut those out, Ben. I don't want the concern trolls coming out for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wanted to say I love the show. I've listened to every episode, but your use of the term dim is incredibly problematic. My friend is dim, and there's nothing he can do about that. And she also, you know, warns them about another category of sanctuary dwellers, ghosts, who are basically just, you know, opportunists who beat people up and take their food ration cards. And she seems to have, like, despite being, you know, right up against it physically, a pretty naive understanding of how the sanctuary zone works. Because she says, like, you know, there's plenty of buildings, so you should have no problem finding a place to sleep. And that is not, in fact, true at all. They get in there and every building has a tough dude standing on the stoop, you know, threatening people away from it.
She's the customer service operator who's like reading from the script with how to fix a certain tech problem.
Speaking of tech problems, Dax has been trying to raise Cisco and Bashir on their communicators whenever she's had some alone moments from Bill Gates or whatever his name is.
You mean Chris Brenner from Brenner Information Systems?
You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
That Chris Brenner.
Yeah. She's not able to reach them, obviously. He's been looking into, like, where they might be. Like, they're looking at hospitals and trauma centers and stuff like that. But he puts her up in a hotel room for a few nights, and he says, like, hey, there's only one set for, like, my life in this episode, this office, so I'm having a party in it later. Do you want to come? And she's like, cool, yeah, I'll come back to this one set.
How they use resources in this episode is a bit of a question mark for me, because in Time's Arrow, they did such a great job with giving Data even the smallest amount of backstory with, like, how he would be able to get clothes or a hotel room or whatever, like with that poker game. But you get the idea that Chris Brenner of Brenner Information Systems is wealthy enough to, you know, comp her a hotel room for a couple of nights.
Right.
But, like, her clothing and her everything she gets later, we don't know how she gets.
I wanted the montage where he's sitting on the round couch thing, and then she comes out in a bunch of different outfits, and he, like, shakes his head at the first five or six.
Right.
Then she comes out in a mini skirt, tights, and a, you know, high-waisted jacket. And he nods his head and, like, gives her the finger guns. And they go to the party. That would have been great.
Yeah.
We know how Cisco and Bashir get their ordinary clothes. They trade those stoop tufts for them. They're like, hey, we want to get up on the roof of this building. And they're like, well, you don't have anything to trade. And they're like, all right, I guess we'll go look somewhere else. And then they're like, wait a minute. And then it's just smash cut to Bashir and Cisco putting, like, wearing the clothes of those guys. That's another scene I would have wanted to see, like, them getting out of their jumpsuits and, like, handing them through the curtain to the stoop tufts, and then having the jackets and stuff passed back to them.
We're told that they look like clowns. People use that word specifically.
Yeah.
I have a hard time imagining there's any value to their uniforms at all. So why would they want to be traded for?
Here's the thing, Adam. Sometimes when you're in a dangerous place, you know, like if you're a kid red in the New York City subway in the 80s and you're wearing a polo jacket and really nice Nikes, like, it's sort of sending a statement like, I can have and defend this polo jacket and Nikes. You know, because a lot of kids are getting jacked for their Nikes on these trains.
I love how much Bashir is embracing the look of the time, because not only did he change clothes, but he's, like, tussled his hair and grown a sudden 5 o'clock shadow.
Do you think he can just kind of, like, go like, and it just pops out?
I mean, if that were a thing, it would have worked for me by now.
Like Homer shaving his
yeah,
his 5 o'clock shadow, and it just, like, pops back the second he finishes.
Bashir fits right in here, post costume change.
Yeah, it looks great. I talked about this a bit before. They meet in this building. This dude who's, like, trying to organize kind of an anti-sanctuary zone rally from within the sanctuary zone. He's worried about his kid because his kid got beat up, but he's looking to, like, do a positive, nonviolent version of the Bell Riots. Like, he's an organizer, and he seems, like, pretty righteous. So he's looking to put this together, and is basically saying, like, go around and, like, tell everybody you meet that we're gonna get together and do, like, a peaceful protest outside of the processing center.
Tell people when they come to the rally to bring their families, their kids.
Wear your best clothes.
Speaking of groovy things where people are wearing their best clothes, let's go to this party. It's a real who's who. I mean, to get invited to a party in the office of Chris Brenner of Brenner Information Systems.
That Chris Brenner.
I love how Dax's updo is like a 3-hour project. Like, I question the resources she's put into finding Bashir and Sisko after seeing her hairstyle for the party.
She's like choked out some exotic bird and included that in the look.
I mean, I was looking up possible places for Sisko and Bashir to be, but then I went down this weird YouTube rabbit hole of like modern hairstyles.
And kind of just like shooting the old breeze with Chris and a couple of his high society friends, she finds out that a possibility is that her crewmates have been put in the sanctuary zone. Not something that Chris Brenner of Brenner Information Systems...
You know, interface, operations, net access, channel 90.
Thought to bring up to her as a possibility.
It's a conversation that also epiphanizes Dax about where Bashir and Sisko might be. Because she, like, bails out of that conversation and she's like, I think I know where they are now.
Yeah, this all adds up. Like, this is why there has been no other evidence of them anywhere.
This is the moment where things get pretty speedy with the cross-cutting between... Yeah. Between scenes, because from here we go back to Sisko and Bashir, where they get into a Star Trek fight around a burn barrel with Biddle and his gang of thugs.
Yeah, these are some bad boys that have been kind of harassing them from the moment that they entered the zone.
How bad can you be if you're wearing a newsboy hat, though? I had a hard time taking Biddle seriously.
Yeah, well, a lot of his buddies get beat up pretty bad, you know, like it's just because of attrition that Sisko and Bashir start to lose. Like,
yeah.
They do get a bunch of Kirk chops on these guys before before the fight starts to go the other way.
Biddle's like, what kind of fighting is this? It's amazing.
Show me how you put your hands together there again. You interlace all of the fingers and then you make a chopping axe motion.
Somehow your fingers don't break on contact. It's impossible.
And yet, it's so effective. A good Samaritan sees Sisko and Bashir start to, you know, have the tide turned on them, and he intervenes, and Biddle sticks him through the belly with a knife. And he and gang run off. Sisko and Bashir are trying to help this Samaritan who has tried to help them. And pretty soon, like, the spotlight of a helicopter is on them, and they need to run off. Sisko has taken this dude's ID in the escape, and when they get a moment to breathe after evading the shotgun wielding cops, Sisko reveals that the man that was just killed was, in fact, Gabriel Bell, the man who is supposed to lead this riot and, like, make it the politically effective moment in history that it was going to be.
Starts a pretty fun sequence that is a lot like the disappearing people from the picture in Back to the Future scene. Like, the timeline has been done polluted. And we know that because back on the Defiant, they've lost communication with the Federation everywhere.
Yeah. I felt a little nonplussed by this scene just because of the way they do it in First Contact, where you get like just kind of the briefest glimpse of the Earth Borgified as they go through the time butthole. I've wanted to know just a tiny bit about what non-Federationified Earth was. Like, was the species wiped out? Was there a non-warp capable society still happening on the surface of the Earth? Did somebody come just like kill them all? Or are there Klingons there? Like, tell me something. Just give me a little something to chew on, you know?
Totally agree, because the idea that there are Romulans outside the neighborhood is an insufficient description of what changed here.
Yeah.
Morn.
Dude, sweet.
Morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
So what's happened is that the timeline has changed, but time has been preserved on board the Defiant. The Defiant representing all that's left of the Federation at this point.
The theory is that because of the, like, chronoton particles in the hull or some bubble that's formed around the ship or something, they're outside of everything else that has changed.
Sisko and Bashir, in the aftermath of Gabriel Bell's death, have vowed to preserve the timeline at all costs. Sisko tells Bashir,
"We have to make sure those hostages survive."
That's a very non-specific announcement, but then, you know, shit really starts to pop off. Like, they're like walking around telling people about this rally that they're trying to put together for a couple days from now, and they start to notice that a lot of people are running around pretty crazy, and they're like, "Hey, what's happening?" And they're like, "Oh, there's like some kind of a Nachos Bell riot getting started."
You can smell it.
Yeah. I mean, it smells delicious. It might give you the shits.
It's because most people don't eat a lot of fiber normally. Mm-hmm. And that constitutes the only fiber in their diet.
Yeah. Those refried beans actually have dietary fiber in them. And then, like, this riot scene, like, there's some wide, like, aerials of this scene. There are a lot of extras here. I think maybe as many extras as we've ever seen in an episode of Star Trek on television. Like,
it's a big scene.
Like, hundreds of people, like, and fires and smoke and, you know, lights swinging through the smoke. It's pretty epic in scope. And Sisko and Bashir get there just in time to, like, yank the shotgun away from one of the bad guys and save this guard from being beaten to a pulp. And they enter the DMV area that they were processed in. And there's Biddle and his buddies starting some shit.
"I think I am making a political statement."
Sisko sees what's happening on scene, and he's like, "Once Biddle shot the first guard, they didn't hesitate. Takes out the second and the third, because what's the difference?
Don't leave any witnesses."
Biddle's got to get it on in this scene, Ben.
Yeah.
"Don't watch him by."
And Sisko introduces himself.
He steps into frame and he goes,
"The name is Bell. Gabriel Bell."
And then it's like, into "To Be Continued."
Yeah. And then, like, "This message paid for by Gabriel Bell for Senate."
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think any campaign run by Gabriel Bell is going to be backed by Chris Brenner of Brenner Information Systems.
Yeah, explicitly backed because Brenner Information Systems can kind of like put its thumb on the scales in terms of what news articles people see because they run all the algorithms.
You know what? With a comment like that, I think that pivots us right into the "Did you like this episode?" portion of the show, Ben.
Yeah, it sure does.
Because when I think about whether or not I like Past Tense Part 1, I think it has mostly to do with the way that Star Trek routinely struggles with its own sense of condescension about modern times and in like near future times as depicted in this ep. I wish it was a little more adept at the sermon that it's trying to do. Because as it is, as we see it, it's too preachy for me, and it takes me out of an essential message that I think would be good if it were handled a little more subtly. What about you?
I remember seeing this episode when it aired. I remember it made a big impression on me, and I thought it was a great episode, but where it fell apart for me was it didn't seem like a realistic future. Like, in 1995, I was watching this going like, fun episode, like, it's a fucking laugh riot to imagine that in 30 years, like, we'll have, you know, formalized ghettos in major American cities and guys walking around in shotguns enforcing fascist political policies. And I think that, like, it seemed a little bit ridiculous from that standpoint then, and now seems like too preachy about our current situation from our perspective in 2018. Somehow it seemed implausible then and too on the nose now.
Yeah, like how strange that it missed the target it intended but hit a further, more difficult target.
Right. Yeah, like you couldn't do the same shot twice.
Yeah.
But that said, like, I think that for the characters, I am compelled, and I found myself compelled again. We've had an impacted assful of Star Trek stories where the characters go back to a time period in San Francisco specifically. And I think this is best in breed for that.
Well, there's no Guinan in this ep, Ben. Come on. You're wrong.
There's also no Mark Twain, though. So
Did someone say my name?
Fuck off.
Good day to you, sir.
Yeah, good day. But what I'm trying to say is, like, I really liked watching this episode, and I was fascinated by that change. And I think that it has something more interesting to say than I realized initially. It's on the side of like for me. I definitely agree with you that it isn't by any means a perfect episode.
Well, why don't we see if we have any perfect priority one messages, Ben?
We always do.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we have a commercial priority one message. And it is from our friend Rob Schulte.
What?
Rob Schulte, as you may know, has a seasonal horror film podcast called Pumpkin Spice Podcast.
I like that he's just taking Uxbridge Shimoda money and turning it right back around and putting it into Uxbridge Shimoda.
Yeah. He's a true believer.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you know that the producer-editor of two Uxbridge Shimoda shows has his own podcast? That's right. Rob's hosts Pumpkin Spice Podcast, a seasonal treat for fans of horror films. Alongside his buddies Graham Young of the Austin Film Society and CatCon personality Brittany High, Rob and co. take on all aspects of the scares. Subscribe now and visit the Patreon page for bonus episodes.
Woo!
Thanks, he says.
Rob's is, as of this recording, we're still right in the thick of Pumpkin Spice Podcast season, and I know that Rob's has been working super hard on that show.
Yeah, they do a different horror film series every year, and this year it is the Child's Play series of films.
Oh man,
which are beloved and hilarious. Occasionally, even intentionally hilarious. And Rob is such a talented producer, it should come as no surprise that he's also a great host of this program. So definitely go and check it out and support the project by going to his Patreon page.
Yeah. Thanks, Robs, for that promotional message.
You know, there are some workplaces that that say that they have ownership of all of the projects that you create while you're employed by them.
Yeah. Is that something that's in the expert Shimoda employment contract? I forget.
I know. I'm going to have to look that up.
We'll have to call the lawyers and get to the bottom of this. We might be entitled to get our beak wet on that Patreon money. Rob is like,
you can't hide
fuck
from
you
us
guys.
Forever, Rob's.
God, we would be so fucked if we didn't work with Rob Schulte.
Our greatest friend of the program, Rob Schulte, we just, like, for no reason.
Just get hella greedy on him.
We would never do that.
No. It's not our way.
Our way is leaving money on the table whenever possible.
Yeah, we've done it. We've done it before, and we'll do it again. Adam, our next priority one message is of a personal nature, and it is from Nick, the sometimes teacher, and it is to Kevin, the dowler. Don't know what that means, but the message goes like this. Hello from China. Life here is amazing. I haven't found Timmy's girlfriend yet. Chinese is tough to learn because I don't have Mike to teach me. Please give Brady a teeny tiny high five from me. Don't work too hard. Tony's lying about the due date. Also, in case Jimmy forgets to tell you, the good side is up. This may be a Chinese state actor activating some element of their espionage apparatus for all we know. Or it could just be an errant sector of the worm-honeyed bosom, or one of the other numerous groups of Priority One message enthusiasts that just write stuff in that seems like mainly designed to confuse us.
I feel like this may be Nick's attempt at circumventing the commercial Priority One message apparatus by trying to sell us on the idea of Chinese language lessons by his friend Mike. What's that about?
We're not in the pocket of Big Mike.
Absolutely not. So many pockets to avoid, Ben.
Yeah. It's a real minefield.
Well, if you have a message of activation or a message of promotion for our greater viewership, you can take it on over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And that's a great value, Ben, because they reach kind of an astonishing amount of people.
Yeah.
And in so doing, they also help the ongoing production of this program.
Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I think I'm going to give my Shimoda to O'Brien for just, like, he never owns up to this at all. Did you notice that?
Yeah, there was God, I should have double-checked the chronoton status of the ship before I swiped up.
Like, the thing that they tell you if you've ever been in a car accident, one of the things is that, like, never admit fault, because you just don't know.
Right.
You don't know what happened. And that is what O'Brien's doing here. He's not admitting fault. He's instead, like, pivoting into CSI mode, a mode without emotion.
Right.
And that is a weird choice. But I guess it's sort of like being a surgeon for an entire career. Like, you're going to lose some people on the operating table.
Yeah.
And like, eventually you just become immune.
That would have been great if the second they disappeared, he dropped to his knees and just started pounding on the floor of the transporter. It never gets any easier. Why?
I personally would love that. What about you, Ben? Who's your Shimoda?
My Shimoda is Biddle, who is kind of the main antagonist that Sisko and Bashir encounter a few times in their time in the Sanctuary Zone, and looks to have been set up to be the main antagonist for the next episode. The first encounter that they have with him, he calls Sisko New Boy. That's his big insult for Sisko, is New Boy.
Oof.
Come on, Biddle. If you're going to be the toughest street tough out here in these streets, you're going to have to do a lot better when you're busting somebody's chops than calling them New Boy.
I mean, it is a historically known slur for a white person to call a black person boy.
Right.
And I wonder if that was the way that they were able to use that word, was by, like, putting a little bit of new on it to get it through without it being so cutting. What do you think about that?
I mean, I thought about that a little bit. I also thought about how, like, anything that didn't include the word boy that was actually creative might have been a more interesting thing for this character to do, because why not actually have him be, like, interesting?
God, you could use that line as a drop in a lot of our episodes, I think.
Mostly just about us.
Yeah.
Yeah. This actor,
we're going to see that wielded at us in the iTunes reviews pretty soon here.
Yeah, yeah.
One star. Why not make it interesting?
Don't do that as a joke. That's not funny.
Flagged as inappropriate.
Yeah. This actor, Frank Military, is actually a lot more accomplished as a producer and writer for television. He's written on, like, NCIS and Jericho and The Unit, and like, he's acted a bunch, but he's also written and produced a ton of television.
Way to reject his surname and go into TV. I think a lot of people had an idea of what line of work he'd get into.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like you and you and every single person in my family ever.
I'm not going to become a sanitation worker. That's where you're going, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the seed of comedy is the unexpected.
Gotta get that cold press action.
Moms can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it gonna be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one, an Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use, and I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply. When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment and recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Ben, what is the very next episode we will be watching, and how exactly will we be watching it?
Well, I can tell you what we will be watching. That is the Past Tense Part 2, Sisko, posing as Gabriel Bell in the 21st century, takes charge of the hostage situation in the processing center. And then, of course, that's just one streaming service's description. The other streaming service went with describing it as, trapped in Earth's past, Sisko must assume a pivotal role in history to try and restore the future. Now, one of these caption writers is getting work in movies. The other is not.
Ben, we are on square 23 in the famous Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets.
Yeah, if you go to gach.biz/game, you can see our game piece.
Ben, we are currently on square 22 of Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Prophets.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Just ahead, we've got a banger. The banger square moves the runabout five spaces back, and in the greater distance is a naked now square, which is the square in which we both record the show Roderick style from the bathtub.
Yeah, if we roll a six, that could be our next episode.
We've rolled a three.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
It looks like we've leapt over the banger.
Oh, man.
And we are on square 25. That was a close one. Just missed that banger.
Those bangers are dangerous, and they're pretty plentiful on this board.
Yeah.
Somehow only two bangers, but they feel like the most dangerous part of the board, even though there's like way more space buttholes.
Wow. Well, safe and sound on a normal episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, my favorite kind.
That'll be a lot of fun, Adam. In the meantime, the funnest thing that happens to us every month is when the Friends of DeSoto, who go out of their way to support the show at 5, 10, 20 bucks a month, whatever you think it's worth to you, when you start at, you know, the $5 level, you get a lot of bonus content from us. You get some... you get all the bonus content for all the shows on the network, which means there's like hundreds of hours, I think, of bonus content there for you to consume. I would say that is really worthwhile. But also, you know, just if you're looking to do the right thing, supporting the show is really worthwhile. You go to MaximumFun.org/donate. You sign up at the amount that is comfortable to you.
Speaking for us both in these uncertain employment times, your support really means a lot, so thanks.
It also means a lot to us when folks go to Apple Podcasts and leave a nice review of the show. We recently went up over the 2,000 review mark. I am happy to say that almost all of those are 5-star reviews, and they really help us rise through the ranks over there. Helps the show's visibility when people search for things and you know, look at the charts and stuff. And the more Friends of DeSoto we can gather around us, the more sustainable this project is in the long term. So we really, really appreciate all of those nice reviews. And we really appreciate you guys, the Friends of DeSoto.
Yeah, among them are some of our favorite Friends of DeSoto, like Adam Ragusea. He's, of course, the guy who chopped and screwed Dark Materia's great theme music into the interstitial music you hear for the DS9 series. He also is the creator of our live show music, which is so, so fun.
Yeah.
Really talented friend.
Also, the great Bill Tilly, who makes trading cards about every episode of our show. And I don't know how to pronounce it, J.J. Lendl?
Oh, yeah.
He's been doing kind of a lot in the style of those TNG trading cards that we used to open up, kind of like retro movie poster style posters of individual episodes of Deep Space Nine. And he's been posting those on Twitter with the Greatest Gen hashtag. And those are really, really fun to look at. And he's doing them every week.
He is so talented. It's amazing.
Yeah. Speaking of Twitter, you can find Adam on there at Cut for Time and me at Benjamin R. Don't be a dick or you will get muted. You can also talk to lots of Friends of DeSoto on the Reddit sub, the Facebook group, something called Discord, which I don't know what it is. And there's always the Wikia, the Greatest Gen Wikia, that keeps track of, you know, all of your drunks, Shimoda, and all of the different inside jokes that we do on the show. They really get granular with, like, you know, what a reference is to and where, like, when it first arose on the show and, like, how it's evolved and stuff. It's really wild that that exists.
I'm glad that it does, because occasionally I need a little help in knowing what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Should I ever lose my mind, that will be a resource that I can use.
Yeah. And I think we both fully expect to lose our minds.
With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine that brings this story to a natural and satisfying conclusion.
Are you saying it's the last episode of our show?
I don't know, maybe. We haven't seen the episode yet.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.